KORC is looking for volunteer local reporters to tell the stories that aren't getting told. So if you have something to share, an expert opinion, or even just anything cool you think people should know about, write us at info@korcfm.com and let's talk. And join us on Sundays to hear local news, interviews, and stories that aren't getting told anywhere else.
You're listening to KORC 105.9 LPFM, Corvallis, Oregon, streaming online at korcfm.com.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music and Civics. I'm Trevor Serra with your Corvallis City meetings for the week of March 11th, 2024. On Monday, March 11th at 4 p.m., the Economic Development Coalition EDC meeting will be held virtually and in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room at 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the meeting virtually. On Tuesday, March 12th at 6:30 p.m., the Historic Resources Commission meeting will be conducted in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be conducted virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to attend the meeting online. On Wednesday, March 13th at 1 p.m., the Climate Action Advisory Board CAB meeting will be held virtually. For details on how to join the meeting virtually, see CorvallisOregon.gov. On Thursday, March 14th at 9 a.m., the Civic Beautification and Urban Forestry Department Advisory Committee meeting will be held at the Corvallis Parks and Recreation Administration Building, 1310 Southwest Avery Park Drive. And, finally, on Saturday, March 16th at 11 a.m., Benton County Commissioner Ajero will be holding Government Comment Corner in the lobby of the Corvallis-Benton County Library. Feel free to stop by to say hello and ask questions about your local government. 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue here in Corvallis. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Serra.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. 2023 was a big year for the labor movement, according to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics. The year saw more major strikes than in any year since the year 2000. A March 1st article in the Northwest Labor Press titled "The Strike Returns" goes into more detail. I would like to read it in its entirety because it succinctly lays out what last year looked like as far as strikes go. So here is "The Strike Returns," written by Don McIntosh and Mallory Grubin. It's official. 2023 had more big strikes than any year since 2000. According to the most recent annual report on strike activity in the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, 2023 saw 33 major work stoppages, defined as a strike or lockout involving more than 1,000 workers and lasting at least one shift during a weekday. Last year's work major stoppages involved 458,900 workers. That's almost double the previous 3 years combined, and it's a return to the levels of the massive teacher strike wave of 2018 and 2019. The biggest strike in 2023 was the 82-day strike by 160,000 members of the Screen Actors Guild, followed by the 3-day strike by 75,600 members of the three unions at Kaiser Permanente, the 3-day strike by 65,000 workers at Los Angeles Unified School District, and the gradually expanding 31-day strike at Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis by 49,800 members of United Auto Workers. The majority of the strikes lasted less than a week, but some were much longer. The longest major work stoppage that began in 2023 was a 104-day strike by 2,300 members of the Graduate Employees Organization at University of Michigan. The next longest was the 102-day strike by 11,500 members of Writers Guild of America against the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. Strike levels are still far below the levels of the 1950s to the 1970s, when there were hundreds of large strikes a year. The all-time record was 1952, with 470 large work stoppages. Strikes fell off dramatically in the 1980s, declining to an all-time low of 5 in 2009. Of course, major work stoppages are only part of the picture of overall strike activity. What about strikes of less than 1,000 workers? The BLS used to track that, but stopped in the early 1980s. To fill the gap, several private organizations have produced estimates in recent years. In 2021, Cornell University's School of Industrial and Labor Relations, the ILR, publicly launched its Labor Action Tracker, an online database of work stoppages and labor protests. The project is now managed by 5 researchers from the ILR and University of Illinois School of Labor and Employment Relations, or the LER. Because the Labor Action Tracker defines strike more broadly as a temporary stoppage of work by a group of workers in order to express a grievance or enforce a demand, it captured a broader range of actions than the BLS report. It documented 466 strikes involving about 540,000 workers in 2023. Roughly 90% of the work stoppages recorded by the tracker involved less than 1,000 workers, according to its annual report. Like the BLS, the tracker has documented an overall rise of strike activity in the total number of work stoppages, the number of workers involved in strikes, and in total strike days in the last 3 years. But researchers noted the numbers are still considerably lower than the 1970s and before. The Labor Action Tracker researchers rely on news coverage, social media posts, union and employer press releases, and other strike databases to verify that a strike or protest actually happened and fill in details about its size, duration, location, and reason. Events that can be confirmed by at least 2 independent sources are added to the tracker and published in an online searchable database at striketracker.ilr.cornell.edu. Again, that's striketracker.ilr.cornell.edu. Senior Research Assistant Catherine Ritchie admits that the tracker has gaps of its own. If researchers can't verify a strike or labor protest with 2 sources or don't hear about it at all, they can't add it to the database. Quote, "A good amount of the strikes I have found but we couldn't verify are from locals that don't post on social media, and if we reach out to them, we are not able to establish contact," Ritchie said. She goes on, "That's definitely an issue with our data, which means at the end of the day, I don't think we even have a full picture," unquote. But because the Labor Action Tracker picks up more detailed information than the BLS can, it paints a more complete picture of the labor movement. For example, it showed that in about 22% of 2023 strikes, workers on the picket line did not belong to a union. Those strikes tend to be much smaller and shorter than union strikes, so they wouldn't make it into the BLS data, said project manager Johnny Callis. But they still show the power of collective action. One strike led by non-union workers at a movie theater in Utah resulted in a $2.50 an hour raise for workers there, he said. The business news organization Bloomberg Law has also kept a database of work stoppages since 1990, and in February, it produced a 30-page special report on union strike activity in 2023. The database relies on published news sources, union publications, Bloomberg's own publications, and government reports to produce an estimate. Bloomberg found 347 work stoppages in 2023, almost one per day somewhere in the United States. And only 2 of those were employer lockouts. All the rest were strikes initiated by workers through their unions. Bloomberg said that was the lowest percentage of lockouts since it began keeping track. According to Bloomberg's estimate, 2023 had the highest single-year strike total in 20 years and was the 3rd year in a row that strikes have grown. The 164 strikes Bloomberg documented in 2021 were the highest count since 2007, and 2022 nearly doubled that with 317 strikes. Bloomberg estimated that 530,287 workers were involved in strikes in 2023, more than the previous 3 years combined. Bloomberg's research also showed that new dynamics are emerging. More than 100 of the strikes were over first contracts, and roughly a fifth of those were strikes for union recognition. Both of those have been rare in recent decades. Strikes at Starbucks were an important fraction of the year's strikes, but even if there hadn't been a single strike at Starbucks, 2023 would have been the busiest strike year since 2005, Bloomberg reported. Coordinated strikes at Starbucks, each targeting over 1,000 locations, were counted as single events in Bloomberg's tally. That was a recitation of the article titled The Strike Returns, written by Don McIntosh and Mallory Grubin from the March edition of the Northwest Labor Press. And the wave of labor action didn't miss our town either. 2023 saw a slew of labor actions across the Corvallis area. Earlier in the year, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, successfully bargained with the city to give city employees a wage boost over the next few years. Later that fall, seven workers at Republic Services went on strike to protest the stonewalling by management of contract negotiations. For 2 months, they stood on the picket line, drawing support from multiple unions around the state and even from members of the Oregon State Legislature, one of whom being Speaker of the House Dan Rayfield, who showed up to a rally in support of the strikers. They eventually went back to work in November with no new deal. And in an ongoing action, Oregon State University workers represented by SEIU have been in contract negotiations with the seven public universities in the state since the fall. The union recently declared an impasse, and after a 30-day cooling-off period, they could go on strike. The cooling-off period ends March 31st. Thank you for listening, and thank you to the authors of the Northwest Labor Press article titled The Strike Returns. This is Nick Martin with KORC.
During heavy rainfall, localized flooding can cause unexpected hazards. If you see significant floodwaters on the road, do not attempt to drive through, especially if the road is marked closed. Even heavy-duty vehicles can lose traction and begin to float away, which is then a game-changer for safety and, in some cases, your survival. 2 inches or more is all it takes to lift some vehicles to float off the road. Do not drive through floodwaters or closed roads. You can visit tripcheck.com or call 511 to get updates on highway conditions. If your property is flooding and you need to evacuate, remember to unplug all electronics and appliances and turn off your electricity at your circuit box. Also, turn off your water and gas valves. Have an emergency plan and be ready to follow evacuation orders, particularly if you live in a flood zone. Benton County flooding is caused by rivers and streams overflowing during high rain or storm events. Localized flooding can happen as a result of overloaded, blocked, or inadequate stormwater drainage systems that cause sheet flow into streets and low-lying areas, then pooling in yards, sewer backups, and basement or first-floor flooding. Most flooding occurs between November and April, though with a changing climate and often increasingly catastrophic weather events, it's good to always be prepared. You can see your flood hazard zone by doing an internet search for My Flood Hazard Zone and follow the link to the FEMA.gov website, FEMA.gov. You're listening to KORC, Community Radio for Corvallis on 105.9 LPFM or streaming at KORCFM.com.
If you're interested in volunteering for or learning about sustainability, the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition has community events running through the month of March, and there are still plenty of opportunities for people who want to make our community a more sustainable place for life. On March 9th, the Audubon Society will lead a bird-watching field trip in Willamette Park. Also on the 9th, volunteers can help with prairie restoration work at Henry Hagg Lake and learn about native prairie ecology. On March 14th, a webinar presentation will explore how historic human activities have transformed the physical, ecological, and cultural resources of Mary's Peak. And on March 21st, Common Fields will host a biology lecture on the freshwater mussels of Oregon. Information on these and many more events can be found at sustainablecorvallis.org. You're listening to 105.9 LPFM, KORC, Corvallis, Oregon. Streaming worldwide at korcfm.com.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. and every Monday evening from 5 to 6 p.m. Families of children who will be 5 years old as of September 15, 2024, are eligible and encouraged to enroll their child in kindergarten at their neighborhood school. Enrollment can be completed at the Corvallis School District website. To complete the enrollment process, families will need to provide the following information: proof of address, proof of age, immunization record, educational support documentation. The district has established specific school boundary areas. If you are uncertain about which elementary school is your neighborhood school, you can check any address to see what boundary area it is located in using the school district's district address locator. More information about this is available by calling 541-757-5811. Families enrolling a kindergartner may request a transfer to a school outside their boundary area only after enrolling at their boundary area school. Transfer requests will be accepted online for Corvallis residents from March 18th through April 1st and non-residents from April 15th through the 29th of this year. Transfers will be subject to grade level enrollment and space limitations. There's an upcoming event called Kindergarten Information Night, Monday, March 18th. All K through 5 elementary schools will offer a Kindergarten Information Night, Monday, March 18th, starting at 5:30 p.m., going through 6:15. These information nights are for incoming kindergarten families to visit their neighborhood school. During the school information night, school staff will be on hand to discuss what life as a kindergarten student looks like and answer other questions. For more information about the kindergarten enrollment process in the Corvallis School District, you can contact your boundary area school, the Corvallis School District Administration Office at 541-766-4700, or there's more information online at csd509j.net/kindergarten, or you can do a Google search for the Corvallis School District and kindergarten. You're listening to KORC, Community Radio for Corvallis. We're streaming online at korcfm.com, where you can also make a secure online donation. And thank you.
This is a KORC Community Voices installment. Have you noticed that the world looks a little different lately? Especially on our roads, and especially at night. You might be driving, or just a passenger, or even a pedestrian on the road. You notice a bright light ahead. What could that be? It must still be a half mile away. As it gets closer, your eyes start to strain, hurting and squinting until you can't see anything at all. It's a struggle just to look straight ahead, even after they've passed you. How did it become this painful just to travel after dark? And how can this go on when we all have to use the roads? It's clear by this point that some portion of our population is affected this way by some modern lighting, particularly in car headlights and public street lamps. In the past 30 years, a revolution in lighting technology has taken place, with the advent of LED lighting, that is, the light-emitting diode. And among the many uses for LEDs, you've probably noticed the change in car headlights and public street lighting. There are many advantages to the more energy-efficient, more compact LED units that have replaced incandescent and fluorescent bulbs. But the biological and physical safety hazards for humans and wildlife need to be considered with this world-changing technology. These two particular applications of lighting, car headlights and street lamps, have tended to use very high color temperatures, resulting in a blue or white hue, as well as extreme brightness to simulate daylight at night. Some portion of consumers demand this for perceived safety or clout, while many others seem dangerously affected by the glare of oncoming traffic or public lighting. Indeed, on a rainy night, the combination of traffic and public lighting reflected on a wet road can result in overstimulation, rendering pedestrians the least visible thing on the road. Data compiled in New York from 2018 to 2023 showed a 28% increase in crashes linked to headlight glare, and more data are following this trend. The human biological system is intricately linked to light wavelengths, which guide our circadian rhythms, or biological clock, to coordinate the essential processes that keep us alive and healthy at the cellular scale. As we're bombarded by bright artificial light at night, more and more scientific research has linked artificial light to a cascade of adverse health problems in many organ systems, from cognitive decline to obesity to cardiovascular disease and beyond. Much research already exists addressing the harmful effects of artificial light on complex nocturnal ecosystems, particularly on disrupting the life cycles of many nocturnal insects and bird species, both of which have experienced precipitous population declines in recent decades. You may have noticed people complaining about these things of late, about the intense glare and the white or blue color temperature these lights use. And that's because the industries and agencies that could be regulating the manufacture of lighting technology for safety and environmental hazards have not adequately done so. While the Code of Federal Regulations does technically limit headlight brightness to 3,000 lumens, about twice what incandescent and halogen bulbs typically produce, that clearly isn't being enforced, and there are other aspects to the technology that cause problems, such as the light density and color temperature. Most state DMVs do not even inspect for brightness or the aim of headlights. Motivated by perceived cost savings, many cities across the United States, including Corvallis, have franchise agreements with utility corporations that have years' worth of glaring white street lamps already stockpiled, giving residents and even city government little agency in protecting the night. Paradoxically, some cities have actually increased their energy usage after vastly expanding their public lighting infrastructure. By the way, you can request from the city of Corvallis that shielding be installed on your street lamps to limit the light cast downwards in a radius around the lamp, rather than outward into your eyes or bedroom window. So much stationary light pollution could be blocked by simply installing these shields, such as the egregious glow emitted from the Oregon State University campus, which has the opportunity to be a proactive pioneer in mitigating lighting hazards without compromising student safety at all. this all means is that, for now, it's up to us, the consumers, to spread awareness and know-how to protect each other on our roads. Check the brightness of your outdoor lighting as it's visible from the road, and install new bulbs or shielding if necessary. Stand in front of your own vehicle to check for brightness, swap out the bulbs if you're able, or have a mechanic or dealership swap them. And spread the positive message about being part of the solution. The Soft Lights Foundation is a national advocacy group headed by Mark Baker, who's attempting to sue the FDA for failing to fulfill its congressional mandate to regulate radiation from electronic products. This is after years of petitions to the National Highway and Transportation Safety Administration and the Department of Energy, with tens of thousands of reports of personal harm from lighting hazards, requesting formal inquiries into this glaring problem. The road is a commons that we must learn to share, and sensible applications of lighting will benefit us all without compromising our safety. While we can protect ourselves and each other from this systemic problem to some extent, it's important to remember that this artificial lighting crisis is a solvable one. Continuing to contact your city council and state legislators will raise awareness about the hazards of modern lighting and their sensible solutions. And someday, we'll again find a place in our world for the dark and tranquil night.
When corporations fail, you pay for it. But when they succeed, it's theirs. They socialize their losses and privatize their gains. Why do we allow that?
Consider this. Wealthy people do not stash their billions in safe deposit boxes loaded with $100 bills. They don't do that. And they don't spend it all at the mall. They don't spend like crazy. No. Wealthy people invest. It is investment that creates jobs and economic growth.
See, this is the lie they tell you. That all this money flowing towards corporate moneyed interests is actually for your benefit. The government intervention for corporations is our free market. But government intervention for workers is socialism. And that's the reason for the socialism scaremongering. It's a false choice. To make you believe that this country has but two options. A socialist, authoritarian, hamburgerless, Venezuelan nightmare. Or accept the status quo, where large corporations benefit from government help, then use some of those profits to lobby the same government for more government help. They want you to believe that in a free market, while your wages stay low, someday the largesse will eventually trickle down. And in the meantime, enjoy watching your tax dollars help billionaires launch themselves into f***ing space.
Listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. KORC has permission from the producers of Democracy Now! To feature segments of their programming on our station. We won't be featuring an entire 60-minute segment. Instead, for example, today's feature will be approximately 11 minutes. It's an exciting opportunity for us, and we hope for you as well. Today, you'll hear several stories about world and national events, as well as a sample of beautiful Palestinian music. Don't forget to go to democracynow.org to listen to or read interviews and learn more information about world and national news events online.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! Here in New York, a delegation of Palestinian Americans who've lost relatives to Israeli attacks in Gaza joined UN Palestinian envoy Riyad Mansour at a UN Security Council press conference Wednesday. This is Dr. Rula El-Fadda, who lost over 150 family members since October 7th.
In December, one of our family members, Sabri al-Farra, was murdered in his home by an Israeli airstrike with his 9 young children. His unfortunate wife survived. She was 8 months pregnant. She was displaced to an evacuation camp where she gave birth to her baby boy 1 month later in January. Her child, her newborn infant, died 20 days later from the cold and the harsh conditions in the camps. Every minute signifies the loss of a life, the starvation of a child. And so we need an immediate and permanent, not temporary, permanent ceasefire now.
In Washington, D.C., activists have set up a protest in front of the Israeli embassy. Israeli-American activist Michael Peled says the protest has disrupted embassy business and is calling on more people to join the action until the embassy is forced to shut down.
Palestinian flags have clearly taken over the other flag that's being flown here. The flag of hope is clearly taken over the flag of hate and apartheid. This is the apartheid embassy. And look at all this. Just brilliant, as far as the eye can see.
Miko Peled is the son of a famous Israeli general. In Austin, Texas, at least 5 musical acts have pulled out of the upcoming South by Southwest Festival over its ties to the U.S. military and military contractors, including RTX Corporation, formerly known as Raytheon. RTX supplies weapons to Israel. Outside the United States, Brazil's Central Workers Union, which represents over 7.4 million workers, has called on the Brazilian government to cancel all military cooperation with Israel. In Canada, rights groups are suing the Global Affairs Ministry for exporting military goods and technology to Israel during its assault on Gaza. In Ukraine, a Russian attack on the port city of Odessa killed at least 5 people, according to the Ukrainian Navy. The strike came as President Volodymyr Zelensky was taking the Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis on a tour of the war-ravaged city, where 12 people, including children, were killed in a drone attack last week. The Greek Prime Minister spoke after Wednesday's attack, which the two leaders heard as they were getting into their cars following the tour.
And I think this is one more reason why all European leaders should come to Ukraine, because it is one thing to see, to hear the description from the mass media or from President Zelensky, with whom we regularly communicate, and it is completely different to experience the war firsthand.
In Russia, Yulia Navalnaya, the widow of the late opposition leader Alexei Navalny, is urging voters to protest President Vladimir Putin at the polls in the March 17th election.
We need to use the election day to show that we exist and there are many of us. We are real. We are alive. We exist and we are against Putin. We need to come to the polling station in the same day and time, noon of March 17.
Что делать дальше? Выбирать вам.
It is up to you to choose what to do next. You can vote for any candidate but Putin. You can spoil the ballot. You can write on it in big letters, Navalny.
The Miami Herald is reporting the Biden administration's pressuring Haiti's unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry to resign amidst an armed uprising against his rule. According to a U.S. document obtained by the Miami Herald, the Biden administration's proposed Henri, quote, step down in the near future. The State Department pushed back on the report, but the U.N. ambassador, Linda Thomas Greenfield, confirmed the U.S. has asked Henri to form a transitional council that would involve the appointment of a new prime minister. Over the past 3 years, the U.S. has been a key backer of Henri, who's deeply unpopular in Haiti. Last week, Ariel Henry visited Kenya to discuss a plan to send 1,000 international Kenyan police officers to Haiti. Henry is now in Puerto Rico, unable to safely return home. Nikki Haley suspended her presidential campaign Wednesday after losing all but Vermont to Donald Trump on Super Tuesday. Haley declined to endorse Trump or any other candidate as she announced the end of her campaign.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
President Biden made a pitch to Haley's supporters saying, quote, I know there's a lot we won't agree on, but on the fundamental issues of preserving American democracy, on standing up for the rule of law, on treating each other with decency, dignity and respect, on preserving NATO and standing up to America's adversaries, I hope and believe we can find common ground, Biden said. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who's leaving his leadership post in November, endorsed Donald Trump. In 2021, McConnell said Trump was morally and practically responsible for the January 6 insurrection and called Trump's actions a, quote, disgraceful dereliction of duty. In more related news, the Supreme Court has set April 25th as the date to hear arguments over whether Trump's immune from criminal prosecution for trying to overturn his 2020 election loss. Alabama Republican Governor Kay Ivey signed into law a bill protecting in vitro fertilization clinics and doctors from lawsuits and prosecution. Lawmakers scrambled to pass the legislation after Alabama's Supreme Court ruled last month frozen embryos have the same rights as children, sending shockwaves through the medical community. At least three clinics suspended treatments in Alabama in response to the ruling. Two of those said they will now resume treatment. Reproductive rights advocates cautioned the new law does not fully resolve the issue as it does not address whether a frozen embryo can be considered a child. To see our segments on IVF, go to democracynow.org. France became the first country in the world to enshrine the right to abortion in its constitution. Following the 780-72 vote, the Eiffel Tower was lit up with the phrase, my body, my choice. Abortion has been legal in France since 1975, but lawmakers decided to take the additional step in direct response to the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade in 2022. This is leftist lawmaker Mathilde Panot.
We are celebrating a historic victory. Our vote is a promise made to the future. Never will our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren have to relive the torment that has preceded them. Our vote is also a promise to all women around the world who are fighting for the right to have control over their bodies in Argentina, in the United States, in Andorra, in Italy, in Hungary, in Poland. Like an echo, today's vote tells them that their fight is ours and that this victory is theirs.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has announced a plan to deploy 1,000 members of the National Guard and state police to patrol New York City subway stations and to check bags of passengers. New York Civil Liberties Union head Donna Lieberman condemned the plan, saying, quote, these heavy-handed approaches will, like stop and frisk, be used to accost and profile black and brown New Yorkers, ripping a page straight out of the Giuliani playbook. Today's announcement fails to address long-standing problems of homelessness, poverty, or access to mental health care, Lieberman said. And in New Mexico, a jury found Hannah Gutierrez Reed, the weapons handler on the film Rust, guilty of involuntary manslaughter for the 2022 killing of cinematographer Helena Hutchins by a loaded prop gun. Jurors agreed that Gutierrez Reed, whose father is a prominent armorer in Hollywood, displayed, quote, willful disregard for the safety of others, unquote. She faces up to 18 months in prison. Alec Baldwin, who fired the gun during a rehearsal, is the star and producer of Rust. He'll face his own manslaughter trial in July. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Bisan by Feruz. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
KORC News, Music, and Civics is proud to feature segments from the Democracy Now! Programming. For more information about world and national news events, visit democracynow.org.
You're listening to KORC News, Music and Civics. I'm Trevor Sayre with your Corvallis City meetings for the week of March 11th, 2024. On Monday, March 11th at 4 p.m., the Economic Development Coalition EDC meeting will be held virtually and in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room at 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the meeting virtually. On Tuesday, March 12th at 6:30 p.m., the Historic Resources Commission meeting will be conducted in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be conducted virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to attend the meeting online. On Wednesday, March 13th at 1 p.m., the Climate Action Advisory Board CAB meeting will be held virtually. For details on how to join the meeting virtually, see CorvallisOregon.gov. On Thursday, March 14th at 9 a.m., the Civic Beautification and Urban Forestry Department Advisory Committee meeting will be held at the Corvallis Parks and Recreation Administration Building, 1310 Southwest Avery Park Drive. And finally, on Saturday, March 16th at 11 a.m., Benton County Commissioner Ajero will be holding Government Comment Corner in the lobby of the Corvallis Benton County Library. Feel free to stop by to say hello and ask questions about your local government. 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue here in Corvallis. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
You're listening to KORC. This is listener-supported community radio serving Corvallis, and we're streaming at KORCFM.com. This is Dan Krall in the Southtown studio, and I am joined today by a local singer-songwriter, Stacy Henley, who lives here in Corvallis. How's it going?
Doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Pretty well. Glad you could take the time to come down with your instrument and play a little music for us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you being here and inviting me in.
You are going to be performing at Common Fields not long from now. When are you going to be there?
This coming Wednesday, March 13th from 6 to 8 p.m.
Common Fields at 2nd and Western, for those of you who don't know. And what are you going to be performing that night?
I will be performing my originals and then some covers like Joni Mitchell and Jillian Welsh. And then my friend Laurie Stevens will also be joining me. And we make up a little duo called the Cider Girls, and she'll be joining me the second half of the session.
So you mentioned Jillian Welsh and Joni Mitchell. Who are some of your other musical influences?
Oh my goodness. Tom Petty, everything from Crosby, Stills and Nash. I love Paul Simon and Simon and Garfunkel. Oh my gosh, the list goes on and on. I can't really think of it anymore.
Well, how many CDs do you have out right now?
Oh, I just have my very first debut EP that I released in April. So just the one. And then I'm working on four more singles right now, finishing up the recording of those.
Well, what are you going to play for us today here in the Southtown studio?
I'm going to play my original song entitled Bed, and then also a Julian Welsh song called Look at Miss Ohio. And then I'll end it with a newer song that I'm working on right now to record, which is called Procrastination State.
Stacey Henley joins us in the Southtown studio. Go ahead and take it away.
Pillow under my head.
That was Bed, performed by Stacey Henley, live in the Southtown studio. When did you write that song?
Man, I think I wrote that song in 2019, maybe? I don't remember. This is about 3-4 years ago. Yeah.
Well, Stacey is going to perform a cover for us now. What's the track you're going to play next?
It's called Look at Miss Ohio, and it was written by Jillian Welsh.
That was Look at Miss Ohio, a song by Jillian Welch from 2003, performed by Stacey Henley, who is a local singer-songwriter here in Corvallis, joining us today in the Southtown studio.
Hello.
That was a very nice take on that track. I feel like I've heard Gillian Welch's version, but you did a nice take, and from what I remember, it sounded a lot like Gillian Welch.
Well, that's a compliment. Thank you.
So what is that song about?
Well, honestly, for me personally, it's about, you know, realizing you have things to take care of and, you know, kind of going through life and just wanting to, like, live a little and be free and play a little bit before you get down to business. So that's how it is for me anyway.
Profound words. You know, she wants to do right, just not right now.
Exactly.
Well, Stacey Henley is going to be performing at Common Fields not long from now. When again is that date?
It's Wednesday, March 13th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then I'll also have my friend Lori Stevens join me. She sings beautiful harmonies, and when we get our voices together, it's actually just delicious. So, yeah, I hope you can make it.
That's this coming Wednesday. Common Fields is located at 2nd and Western, and they have outdoor seating, warmed outdoor seating, I should mention. You sit down, and a sensor is activated that warms your butt.
Well, that's true, but it's actually going to be just indoors this time.
Oh, even better. So if you're afraid of it being too cold, why, it's an indoor performance. Common Fields, tell us the time one more time.
From 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, March 13th.
That's Stacey Henley, and she is going to take us out with a song that you will hear if you make it to the performance at Common Fields. Tell us about the song we are about to hear.
Well, this is another song I mentioned earlier called Procrastination State. I'll do, I'm kind of waffling between two, but I think I'll do Procrastination State because it's about procrastinating, basically, and just, it's a good, upbeat, you know, rocking little song. So, and I'm in the process of recording this one as well.
Procrastination State, performed live here in the Southtown studio. This recording was made on Saturday, March 9th of 2024. Thanks for joining us today on KORC. Here's local singer-songwriter Stacey Henley.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics. You can hear this program every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. We also encore this program Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. If you would like to be involved and help us with this weekly effort, it is no small chore, but we are growing, and every week we learn something new, and we want to work with people like you who want to help us tell the stories that aren't getting told. If you'd like to get involved with KORC, send an email to info@korcfm.com and we will be in touch. Thanks for your interest in your local community radio station, KORC. You can stream the station worldwide at korcfm.com.
Do you or a loved one suffer from persistent tinnitus or hearing loss caused by prolonged exposure to extreme death metal?
If not, I, DJ Old Man Winther, can help 1 hour at a time. The Return from Chaos program airs Thursdays at 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 10 p.m. Only here on KOR 105.9 LPFM. All hail